figure, the point four, the lower the figure, that means the more, a greater efficiency because you're using less fuel per per horsepower.
Oh, is it 0.4 pounds per horsepower? Is that what you're saying?
That's what I should have said, yes. Yeah, okay. I didn't say it. So, my figures came to about 0.39, 0.4. Now, you know, an automotive engine, per se, just by itself, if you got the wind with you, that's got about a 17% efficiency. Here, we're talking in the order of 80 or 90% efficiency with that 0.4. So, we're talking a tremendous incremental improvement in the efficiency of an engine. He was enamored in two areas. He perceived it in a, because he knew fine cars. He had a big old-time Cadillac. He had a big old-time Rolls Royce. Because he was of that 20s era, you see, when he was in his prime. He was now retired and doing all these things for his retirement place.
This Bill Thompson worked for Cuey at one time.
That's for whom?
Cuey Corporation.
No, I don't think so.
You didn't? Was he a great big man?
No, he was not. He was a rather slight man.
I knew what.
Did you?
Go ahead.
The upshot of the thing is that he the engine could be very modular. You could have it. You could have this two cylinders, one on one side and one on the other. You could have it four. You could have it six. You could have it eight. Or change the size and do it on the same basis. So it had tremendous flexibility, theoretically. It had tremendous flexibility from the point of view of its applications. So the other dream he had, because he was a nut on steam locomotives, which now were being operated by diesel, his other dream was, boy, this engine is ideal for the big steam locomotive. He felt, in all honesty, the glamour of the car was secondary to the reality of what he felt this engine was designed for. Big, earth-moving equipments like the, what's the name of that Christian guy that built earth equipments down in Texas?
Letourneau.
Yeah, Letourneau. And big locomotives. That was his, where he really felt this thing had its application. I'm probably the only living person that has all the drawings, all the write-ups, my own engineering calculations for what they're worth. I still have them in my files. He died, and unfortunately he was a man who, like a lot of us, we decide we're going to lie. And he gave the impression that he had, not only that he had put a lot of the patents, and he defined the areas where the patents would be applicable. And there were about 12, if I remember correctly. And such as I would be able to judge, I confirmed that they seemed to be patentable areas. But knowing of his background in Detroit, I figured if he said they were, by heavens, they probably were. When he died, he said he took them all to Lyons and Lyons.
Yeah, that's the attorney I used, Los Angeles.
Los Angeles, exactly. So when, after he passed away, his son, the name I'm trying to think of, inquired with Lyons and Lyons. And they said, well, we know Mr. Thompson because there was some early patents. He showed me a patent he had on an entirely different thing, which he sold. Which he sold to an aerospace company, but it wasn't in this area. It was an entirely different thing, because he was an engineer. Lyons and Lyons said, "We know Mr. Thompson because he has had done some patent work with us, but none of these that you speak of do we have." So, vanity, or what we also discovered was that he was supposed to own a lot of apartments that his wife was managing. And of course, he never said this in her presence, but she was seldom present. I guess she knew more about him than we realized. she was a real estate agent and was doing quite well on her own, and that's what sustained that family, I realized. He had no money, and for some reason or other, whatever these things were, he was supposed to have gotten from his parents, who had this big ranch in Wyoming, never materialized. And neither did his patents. So that's kind of a sad finale to a man who had a lot of interesting background and was a great storyteller. Always used to tell some stories about up in Wyoming when he was a boy, when his father or somebody would take him into a saloon briefly, and then there would be some western spat that went on there that he had a chance to observe as a, kid. And there were a lot of wonderful stories. He was a great storyteller. Okay. The reason I'm bringing this up is because the steam reciprocator, you might say, why mix the steam reciprocator with the combustion engine? A steam reciprocator, once you crack the valve, you have what amounts to your highest and flat torque curve.
It's real powerful stuff.
A steam reciprocator has torque right from the start. Actually, to talk in terms of RPMs and horsepower in a combustion engine was something that we got into. I don't remember well.
You don't need a clutch on the steam job.
That's right. You don't need a clutch. You just crack the throttle.
Figure, the point four, the lower the figure, that means the greater efficiency because you're using less fuel per horsepower.
Oh, it is 0.4 pounds per horsepower? Is that what you're saying?
That's what I should have said, yes.
Yeah, okay.
I didn't say it. So, my figures came to about 0.39, 0.4. Now, you know, an automotive engine, per se, just by itself, if you got the wind with you, that's got about a 17% efficiency. Here, we're talking in the order of 80 or 90% efficiency with that 0.4. So we're talking a tremendous incremental improvement in the efficiency of an engine. He was enamored in two areas. He perceived it because he knew fine cars. He had a big old-time Cadillac. He had a big old-time Rolls Royce. Because he was of that 20s era, you see, when he was in his prime. He was now retired and doing all these things for his retirement
place. Bill Thompson worked for Cubic at one time.
That's for whom?
Cubic Corporation.
No, I don't think so.
You didn't?
Uh-uh.
Was he a great big man?
No, he was not. He was a rather slight man.
I knew what.
Did you?
Yeah. Go ahead.
The upshot of the thing is that the engine could be very modular. You could have this two cylinders. One on one side and one on the other. You can have it four. You can have it six. You can have it eight. Or change the size and do it on the same basis. So it had tremendous flexibility, theoretically. It had tremendous flexibility from the point of view of its applications. So the other dream he had, because he was a nut on steam locomotives, which now were being operated by diesel, his other dream was, boy, this engine is ideal for the big steam locomotive. He felt, in all honesty, the glamour of the car was secondary to the reality of what he felt this engine was designed for. Big, earth-moving equipments like what's the name of that Christian guy that built earth equipments down in Texas?
Letourneau.
Yeah, Letourneau. And big locomotives. That was his, where he really felt this thing had its application. I'm probably the only living person that has all the drawings, all the write-ups, my own engineering calculations for what they're worth. I still have them in my files. He died, and unfortunately, he was a man who, like a lot of us, we decide we're going to lie. And he gave the impression that he had, not only that he had put a lot of the patents, and he defined the areas where the patents would be applicable. And there were about 12, if I remember correctly. And such as I would be able to judge, I confirmed that they seemed to be patentable areas. But knowing of his background in Detroit, I figured if he said they were, by heavens, they probably were. When he died, and he said he took them all to Lyons and Lyons.
Yeah, that's the attorney I used, Los Angeles.
Right, Los Angeles, exactly. So when, after he passed away, his son, the name I'm trying to think of, inquired with Lyons and Lyons. And they said, well, we know Mr. Thompson because there was some early patents. He showed me a patent he had on an entirely different thing, which he sold. Which he sold to an aerospace company, but it wasn't in this area. It was an entirely different thing because he was an engineer. Lyons and Lyons said, we know Mr. Thompson because he has had done some patent work with us, but none of these that you speak of do we have. So, vanity, or what we also discovered was that he was supposed to own a lot of apartments that his wife was managing. And of course, he never said this in her presence, but she was seldom present. I guess she knew more about him than we realized. She was a real estate agent and was doing quite well on her own, and that's what sustained that family, I realized. He had no money. And for some reason or other, whatever these things were he was supposed to have gotten from his parents, who had this big ranch in Wyoming, never materialized. And neither did his patents. So that's kind of a sad finale to a man who had a lot of interesting background and was a great storyteller. He used to tell some stories about up in Wyoming when he was a boy, when his father or somebody would take him into a saloon briefly, and then there would be some Western spat that went on there that he had a chance to observe as a kid. And there were a lot of wonderful stories. He was a great storyteller. Okay, the reason I'm bringing this up is because the steam reciprocator, you might say, why mix the steam reciprocator with the combustion engine? A steam reciprocator, once you crack the valve, you have what amounts to your highest and flat torque curve.
It's real powerful stuff.
A steam reciprocator has torque right from the start. Actually, to talk in terms of RPMs and horsepower in a combustion engine was something that we got into. I don't remember well enough.
You don't need a clutch on the steam job.
That's right. You don't need a clutch. You just crack the throttle and open it, and you've got torque right now.
You see, a steam-powered car, would accelerate faster than any gasoline job.
Oh, absolutely. That's right.
Now they've perfected the reciprocating internal combustion.
Right, with the splendid hydrodynamics and so forth.
But I think you could do a lot better with high-pressure steam if you wanted to.
That's right. The point is that he envisaged this. I've got an automobile. I'm driving down the street. I've got my Thompson Sterling engine in operation. I come to a stoplight. I put my foot on the brake, take my foot off the accelerator concurrently. The steam reciprocator, the combustion engine immediately has no more fuel in it. But that engine is still idling. You have to de-clutch because you've got it on the driveline. But that engine is still idling because you've still got residual steam in the boiler. And that engine is idling. There comes a point then when you seal that off so that you retain steam in the boiler while you're sitting there. The light goes green, you open up the throttle, your steam reciprocator's got power right now, off you go. In the meantime, your combustion engine is picking up and joining, if you will, on the piston.
Dual input, huh?
That's right. There was another aspect of this that I'm trying to remember because of the efficiencies. Oh, we could use
We could use some of that exhaust steam heat. We could use some of that exhaust steam heat to run the generators for air conditioning and lights and so forth. And of course, at that time, I wasn't talking Jake's or cells, but it's ideal. Draw off some of the residual exhaust heat and thereby remove that heat energy, which you have to do anyhow, and use it in a little Jake Pucel steam generator for lights and or air conditioning, etc., or heating. Well, I guess that's the sum and substance of my story. I just wanted you to know about it.
That's an interesting concept.
Never built one.
I don't know whether it ever proved to be very feasible, because eventually we would have much greatly simplified systems. It's already been described here, but take, for example, this Pucel turbine, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, right.
It apparently is very silent and very efficient.
Yes, it is. However, just like any basic turbine, a turbine has a very narrow line of efficiency. In other words, you want to keep a turbine
has
running.
Has to run at a constant speed.
Say again?
Has to run at a constant
exactly.
speed.
Exactly. A turbine
run at its appropriate speed range.
That's right. Its efficiency is a very sharp, narrow curve. It goes up and peaks, and that's the peak you want to run it at, a constant speed. Well, obviously, in an automotive situation, you've got to have a means for breaking the rotation from the wheels while the turbine continues to operate at that efficient speed. You don't rise and fall with a turbine.
Is that the reason why Chrysler never did get along with their turbine car?
I do not know. How did you know that we had played with... Oh, you mean with...
Chrysler's turbine.
Huh?
You know, Chrysler put out a turbine car.
Yeah, I know that. What my mind was shifting into a gear on some memories. Because Bill Thompson and myself and others, we had a long session with Chrysler. They really looked into this engine and gave us... They were very much interested, but it was at the time when they were beginning to collapse. I forget the name of the president, but he was an accountant, not a guy like Iacocca. And they were beginning to face some real problems, which we didn't know, of course, at the time. But they became very much interested, and we thought, here's a go. And suddenly they backed off. So that's why I responded as I did. Again, when you talk about Chrysler's turbine car, I would say, I'm sure that was one of the grave problems, the fact that a constant speed is required. That's right.
Well, you know, there was one in San Diego that disappeared.
Oh, yeah.
And I saw one in one time when I was in New York City, when they first brought it out, their
right.
first demonstrator.
Yeah.
I got a chance to look at it. They surveyed the engineers and the people going in there.
Yep.
It was quite a car.
Well,
very inefficient though, 8
yeah.
miles per gallon.
Well, you may remember the government of California put out a big allotment of money for people to build steam cars. And what's the name of this aircraft manufacturer that died?
Lear?
Huh?
Lear? Lear?
Bill Lear? Bill
yeah,
Lear?
Bill Lear. Built a bus. Well, we all knew that, and as they did, that the reason the state of California did it was because they were trying to reduce the exhaust emissions, which of course a steam engine is very clean, but costly to beat all everything you can think of, because they are not an efficient engine. So Bill Lear built a beautiful bus, and several other people built cars and buses. And the state of California approved, because the emissions were all so clean. And this was something that, under my learning from Bill Thompson, we said, hey,
This is what's going to happen. And then after it was all through and they spent their money, you never heard another word about it. Because there wasn't anybody who was going to buy one of those because they couldn't afford it. And from the point of view of operation, they were inefficient.
You see, the reason I think we want to study some of these things like your experience has brought forth is that when we get into the ultimate propulsion system with free energy, we're going to have our own little cars. And they'll probably be electrostatically propelled somehow. I don't know how.
Yeah, right.
I've worked a lot on that, but I've seen these cushion type of aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
When I was at Ryan, they had one of those things there.
Yes, I know they do.
But there's another deal somewhere. It's in the background. I can't pull it out right now.
I thought there was another steam engine.
Didn't somebody have it? Yeah, well,
but I can't remember.
Wait, don't interrupt her. Doesn't somebody have a connection or sometime with an aircraft manufacturer who has a new type of propulsion? This came up yesterday, didn't it?
I told you yesterday about my friend Bill Mooney in Long Beach.
Yeah, that was it.
Who has a four-poster.
Yeah, that was it.
Right, and he was having trouble getting an engine, you remember? You said, was it the people in Phoenix?
Air Research?
Air Research, and I said yes. But he has since discovered, let me put it this way, this is interesting. First place, I should tell you all that Jake Bissell designed a turbine engine for that plane, and they tested it in a wind tunnel. They got wind tunnel time, and with great success up to a point. But the trouble is, to go ahead and get that engine certified through all the governmental processes, they did not have the money or the time. But Jake's engines, turbine engines, probably ultimately will appear in that kind of aircraft. But let me put that aside for a minute. They discovered, this is kind of interesting, Jake made a proposal to the Army, some kind of an application, and he didn't try to describe it, but he said, I'll give you a copy of the proposal. It went down, and Jake said, I knew that this was what they're going to want because it fits their need to the T. Spent a lot of time and effort on it. He got the whole package returned with a letter saying, in effect, we don't understand. And so he was kind of furious and he called whoever it was, Dr. So-and-so. He got the strangest gobbledygook you ever heard.
They didn't want him to develop it, did they?
They did not want him to develop it. But, somehow or other, through another channel, and this is in Huntsville, they had this in a completely changed, not the same application that he did on it, but in other things, they had a remarkable engine for some kind of a weapon system. And Jake said, I know where that could be used. And he was thinking of Bill Mooney. Mind you, there's a lot of gaps in what I'm telling you because I don't know. And they said, all right, we'll take a chance on it. We'll go through certain channels, but they'd already had a lot of Army interest in Bill's Moody's plane. Calls it the Dragon, by the way. And they finally said, we'll let you have four of these engines. Nobody else had those engines, and they were classified. So Bill expects to get those. Now, I haven't talked to Bill for a month, so I don't know where that stands. But that's one source that may take care of his problem initially. But in the long run, he needs certified engines.
Well, that takes quite a bit to certify.
Time and money. Yeah. Anything having to do with FAA certification.
1,000 hours or something like that.
FAA certification really takes a lot.
Did you know, I didn't know this. Did you know that military engines will have a duplicate, the same engine, basically, for a commercial purpose? The military engine will be an absolutely inefficient fuel gobbler, whereas the commercial use is an engine that's been carefully designed for efficiency. And I wondered about that for a long time, and finally something came up and the answer came out. That highly inefficient duplicate engine that the military is using has to be able to go into, in effect, overdrive or the highest RPMs or whatever under certain wartime conditions.
Takeoff
or whatever. Or to go in and bomb, or I can't tell you exactly. And that is not compatible with the efficiency design changes in the regular commercial engine.
Commercial engine, they don't run as hot.
That's the whole point, and I guess.
You take and develop a lot of horsepower in one of these, climbing out of a deal, you know, climbing
high
altitude and such. It will strain and stress the engine a lot more. That's why they have an inefficient thing. Run it with lots of fuel to keep it cool.
There you go. That may well be the answer. I didn't know that.
I worked in this.
Yeah, well, you know what I'm, you know the answer.
Power plants.
Well, that's my story on the Thompson Sterling engine.
You got a lot of stories. Do we have anything to get back here?
A man full of stories with nothing in them.
I keep trying to get you to help put things together.
What's still, you mean the...
Here.
Oh, that
here. Just popped into my mind a while ago.
Well.
Elizabeth.
Yeah, well, I know what they're trying to do.
You just don't think. Something popped into my mind just
now. Go ahead.
That's very inefficient.
Yeah.
Use the post cell thing inside. Yes.
I think you're on to it.
Yeah, I think so. It just popped in my mind about 10 minutes ago.
I just see a picture of one of these post cell rotors or what?
Well, you know what the old...
I should have brought one of the discs. I have one at home.
You have?
Yeah.
You know what the old radio...
I can do almost as well. All right.
My goodness.
I won't tell.
Oh, boy, you're going to bed, kid.
Well, let me meet him first.
What he wants
need my naked bird.
You hold the metal disc.
Yeah. The bed.
Capacitor to me.
Yeah.
Noisy, but Albert comes and bites you when he's ready.
Doing the same thing. That's a full cell pump base.
Oh,
yeah.
All right, now, you think you could get efficiency with it?